We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Dingo, the World's Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. It's been 2 weeks since our last podcast. There are exactly two games to go for the rest of the season. Michael McNamara. These two games, are they the most important games in the history of the Pelicans franchise?
Pelicans franchise? Actually, that might be in the discussion. It's only a year old. I mean, I don't know what the most important games this year was. But, no, I mean, two less games at home, a couple of things. You could avoid the 50 losses if that arbitrary number matters to you, and also could have a home record where you finish with more wins than losses if you win one of these two. So maybe it has some importance, but that's about as far as I could sell it.
Yeah. So I don't think I'm going to spend a lot of time talking about these games. What I wanted to focus on was the most important question we have going into the summer.
Okay. How much money do we give Greg Stiemsma?
No. I was thinking, how long should the contract be and how much money for James Sutherland?
Oh, King James?
Yeah, obviously King James.
Yeah. No, I mean, these are the little straws you've got to grasp at when your top seven scorers are injured and not playing in the final few games.
It is crazy.
It's insane. I mean, I've referred to other years in the past, 06, 07, was kind of bad. The Baron Davis. What was the Dan Dickow year? 2003, 2004.
Yeah.
That was
bad because there's no talent. But
I mean, if you look at what that team could have had without injuries, I mean, Baron Davis got hurt and then just quit. David Wesley got hurt. Jamal McGlory, who was an all-star prior to that, got hurt. Jamal Mashburn doesn't play a game because of freaking vertigo.
I like how you remind everybody that Jamal McGlory was an all-star.
Well, I'm just saying the team was missing some significant players, but no, those two years were bad, but this is just on a whole new level, and it cracks me up when, you know, sometimes I listen to the opposing team announcers just to hear what they're going to say about us. And it cracks me up when they're like, oh, you know, the Rockets announcers, we're missing Parsons tonight. It's going to be hard without Parsons. He's really a guy that helps the ball move around the perimeter. Like, oh, I feel so sorry for you. You're missing Chandler freaking Parsons. You know, the Pelicans are missing their top seven scorers. It's absolutely ridiculous, and I'm just praying it's a one-year aberration, at least for the new franchise.
So I think you reverse cursed us, by the way, because all you could talk about coming this season was Eric Gordon's health, Eric Gordon, how he's got to stay healthy. And you forgot to talk about everybody else. So they're just punishing you. If you just mentioned each of their names once the last summer, we would have been fine. So this entire season is entirely your fault.
Oh, I already agree with that. But how about the guys who are immune to getting injured? Like Al-Farouq Aminu can't get an injury if he tries. Like he stays on the court. I mean, all the guys that, not saying I would ever wish for injury, but if you told me that somebody had to get injured, you know, I would pick certain guys, and those guys just, they're immune to any kind of injury. But yeah, I mean, it's, you got to root for different things in these last couple games. It's great to see the team competing in a few of these games, but it's just, you know, it's, the season's got to give us mercy at some point. It's just getting ridiculous.
Yeah. So I have an actual real question for you here. Let's say that the health was better. Like Ryan Anderson played like the 70, 75 games you'd expect. And, you know, Eric Gordon never had his I'm tired of playing in games anymore because everybody else is injured, I'm going to stop playing. And Drew Holiday played more in line of what he usually does. Just imagine that. Then look at this Western Conference and how teams are just barely scrabbling to get in. I mean, Phoenix is 47-33. And as of right now, they're not playing in the playoffs. If they'd been healthy, was New Orleans a team that was actually making the playoffs this year?
All right. Well, there's a couple of things to consider here, but because a lot of people will basically turn that question into, could they have won 50 games? But they wouldn't have had to, because they're 0-4 against Phoenix. They're 0-4 against Dallas. And then, you know, on and on and on. They're not 0-4 against either of those teams with a healthy squad. So all of a sudden, those win totals come down too. I think you're talking about more realistically 47, 48 wins to make the playoffs. Now, even that, I don't think – I think it's more likely than not they wouldn't have done. But what I do think would have happened – is this would have been, you know, when you see those stats of these are the best records since February 1st or March 1st or some arbitrary date, they would have been on those lists because, you know, I think that the slow start, even though the schedule was nice, was inevitable because of how much you had to kind of put together all at once. But if they would have stayed healthy, they would have been one of those teams on the best record second half of the season list. It might not been enough to get them in the Western Conference playoffs, but I think they would have definitely been ahead of Minnesota. I think they would have definitely been over 500.
All right. So let me continue that line of questioning then for you. So let's say this is a team that realistically should have won 46 wins this year and would have been right on the bubble. Maybe they didn't made it in, but probably not. Does that mean we need major changes for next year?
No, I mean, I wouldn't think, especially if, like I said, you're one of the better teams in the second half. You know, you're just running out of games at that point, but you're obviously one of the top 10 teams in the league. I think this year was always a kind of, and this is where the real shame for this season is to me, is that this year was kind of an experiment year and see what you have and figure out the roles of certain guys and get guys to understand the system. And, you know, and that was just never able to be done because, you know, you had the five players together for what was it, 9 games, something like that. I mean, such a small amount of time. So, no, the growth was always going to come internally from there and then possibly one more semi-major move if you could get Eric Gordon off the books.
And that's what I'm going to next. So you actually, over the last couple of weeks, have produced 2 articles about stretching Eric Gordon and not by the neck. So for those of us who haven't necessarily gone and read it on the site, explain what is this idea of stretching Eric Gordon, and then say what would you prefer Dell to do if he took the option of stretching Eric Gordon.
All right, I'll try to put this into as few words as possible while still explaining it. They were, you know, two articles about 2,600 words, but I'll try to boil it down.
You can do it. I have faith in you.
Essentially, the stretch provision, anybody who's familiar with football, I think you would be more familiar with this since NBA contracts are almost all fully guaranteed unless, you know, a team negotiates a partial guarantee in the contract. Since they're all fully guaranteed, you just can't cut people in the NBA and take their salary off the books. In addition to the new CBA was something called the stretch provision, where essentially they said, instead of just eating all that money that you owe the guy that one year, you could stretch it out over a number of years, and specifically two times the number of years the guy is owed plus one. So if the guy has 2 years left on his contract, you could stretch out the remaining salary for 5 years. If he has 3 years left, you could stretch it out for 7 years. 1 year, you could stretch it out for 3 years, whatever. So Eric Gordon has $30 million left guaranteed on his contract. If you were to, let's say, just cut him and stretch it out this summer, you would have $6 million of just dead money on your books for the next 5 years. If you wait till the following year, you're looking at, you know, $5 million of dead money on your books for three consecutive years. So, you know, it's an option to where if a guy is just absolutely taking up far too much room and killing you and you want to get out from under that, it gives you an option where it allows you to spread that money over multiple years, which isn't ideal by any means, but for the Pelicans, it might be a situation worth exploring because they really only have this summer and next summer to add another major free agent, because the summer after that, Anthony Davis's max contract will come on the books, and at that point, you're probably done with all your flexibility. So if they could spread out Eric Gordon's cap hit, it would be something worth exploring, because that would give them the ability to add another fairly significant piece. Guys that I've talked about are like a Nikola Vucevic next year, a Jimmy Butler, you know, a Marc Gasol and Kawhi Leonard are pie in the sky dreams, but guys like that, DeAndre Jordan, you know, whatever. So it's an option that the Pelicans could explore if they can't move Eric Gordon for an expiring contract, which, with another knee surgery now on the books, and now it's actually his other knee, you know, his quote unquote good knee, I just think it's going to be harder to do. So that two-part series, which you could read on the site, was my way of exploring kind of a fail-safe, last-case scenario option if the Pelicans can't move Gordon.
Right. Right. You really should go read it, because there's even more pieces in there. There's like different ways they can do buyouts even that could offer him technically more money than what he's really guaranteed from the Pelicans, and then stretch that. There's a bunch of different ways that you could do it. So here's the thing, though. You've said this before, you know, you want Eric Gordon gone as soon as possible so they have the flexibility. Are you willing to send out a real set of assets at all to get rid of Eric Gordon? Or would you rather that if you have to give up something significant this summer to get rid of him, would you prefer to see if he'll possibly opt out of his fourth year of his contract?
I mean, it's a gamble. The stretch provision kind of helps you out with that gamble. You know, and even if he opts in, it makes it a little bit more palatable. But I mean, I would definitely go this far. I would definitely do Eric Gordon. I mean, trying to think of realistic ones. You know, the Eric Gordon's, the surgery he's having's not that bad. We're talking probably, you know, 4 to 6 weeks surgery. It's something that you could have during the season and be back later in the season. So, you know, there's a chance that he could be rehabbing, playing pickup ball with some other NBA players, and then word gets back to general managers this summer. But it's still not a good thing. But, I mean, I don't know if you consider this a lot, but I would send Gordon, Austin Rivers, and then your choice of Pierre Jackson or Jeff Withey for Carlos Boozer. So, who's just an expiring contract. I mean, yeah, I'll keep him for the year or maybe move him for two other, you know, smaller expiring contracts from a contender, whatever. But I would be willing to part with somebody like Rivers, who I think, you know, Tom Thibodeau would be really interested in, and maybe even Pierre or Withey, who I would be reluctant to, but if it was a deal breaker, I mean, I would be willing to go that far. That's how, I mean, to me, that's how important it is to get this guy off the books as soon as possible.
Yeah. So, my take, I would trade anything with Eric Gordon that's not one of the remaining core four in any combination, in any number, except for Anthony Morrow, who I'll be trying to re-sign. Mm. And I wouldn't trade draft picks. That's one question. Like, this team needs draft picks going forward. We can't keep trading draft picks for pieces, major pieces. They need draft picks going forward so you can start doing like the draft and stash kind of thing and try to keep some sort of talent flowing in, even if it's not going to be premier talent. But honestly, yeah, I mean, I would put Eric Gordon on the table with anything, including Jeff Withey, including Pierre Jackson, Austin Rivers, anything. Just get him out of here.
Yeah, and I mean, the other option that I talked about in that piece was actually something the Phoenix Suns and Michael Beasley did, that to me I think is a win-win for both sides. To, as short as possible, like I said, Eric Gordon's owed $30 million. If the Pelicans went up to him and just said, we'll give you $20 million to walk out that door and never play again, you know, I think that would be Eric Gordon would have to think he could get more than $10 million over the next 2 years, right? I mean, he would just, he would have to. And then, you know, if that's the case, you know, essentially you leave the whole hit on for the first season, and then you've got, I don't know, I forget what the math breaks down to, but basically then you could stretch it out, and you've just got about $2.5 million in dead money on your cap for the next three seasons. I just think that's such a win-win scenario. Eric Gordon could walk out with more money. He could actually play for a team and maybe even a fan base that wants him. The Pelicans could get a bunch of cap relief this year and next year and only really have to swallow a little bit of, you know, what's equal to a biannual contract in dead salary for the 3 years after that. I just think that is something that would be a no-brainer, hopefully, for both sides. So, I mean, I would explore all of these things, obviously, but, you know, if Gordon is just petulant and he's going to stay and he says, I'm going to take every bit of that money that you guys gave me, like, I agree, I would give anything to get him off the roster as soon as possible and just, you know, start with that flexibility and figuring out ways to surround this core four. Because, yeah, Rivers is a nice player. Withey's shown us a couple of things here and there. But the one thing we have learned that nobody could debate about Dell Demps is that he gets bargain basement, backup, you know, end of roster or even mid-end of roster guys. He just plucks them out of nowhere. And, you know, he's able to do that all day. Anthony Morrow, on a minimum contract, is one of our best players this year. So I have no doubt that he could do that again and again and again. So I'd be willing to trade as many of those guys just to get out from this mistake.
Yep. All right. So let's talk something about lineups. Because you were talking earlier about, you know, Houston and them complaining about Chandler Parsons. I wanted to get your feeling. There's, you know, you can go on NBA.com and see a whole mess of different lineup data and whether they perform well or not. Most teams, in fact, every team in the league, except for the Pelicans, has at least one lineup that has booked 300 minutes together. Many teams have multiple. Example, the Thunder, who have been missing Russell Westbrook all year, or not all year, but for a significant portion of the year, they've booked 340 minutes with him in a single lineup, and 500 minutes together without him when he was when he's injured. Guess how many minutes the Pelicans had with one lineup this year. This is the one five-man lineup that had the most total minutes together.
Can I guess the lineup first?
Sure, go ahead.
Is it okay? All right, so I'm going to have to go.
And just to give you a hint, they only had 16 games together, too.
Oh, okay.
There's no five-man lineup the Pelicans rolled out that played more than 22 games together.
Wow. So they've only played okay, so I was going to guess the lineup with Roberts at point guard, but that, I guess that can't be it. So I guess it would be Drew, Gordon, Aminu, Davis, and Smith.
Yeah, that's right. They had 16 games together, and they played exactly 200 minutes total.
Wow.
That is so desperately bad. And they were a net positive. And then here's where the world explodes for the Pelicans. Their second most used lineup. This one actually got 22 games together, but they had less minutes because nobody in their right mind would actually play this group together for long periods of time. Brian Roberts,
yeah.
Eric Gordon, Aminu, Davis, Ajinka. So this is the lineup that got the second most minutes, and it was outscored while it was on the floor by 15 points. It's just a complete net negative.
Mm.
It's a terrible team.
Wow.
And you just keep, I mean, the craziest part about this is, like, I look at other teams, like, even San Antonio, which has had, like, massive injuries issues, and even like fake injury issues where they're resting their veteran players all the time. They have 10 different lineups that booked at least 150 minutes together. The Pelicans only had four that booked more than 100.
And I mean, that's great. 100 minutes is all a lineup would have to do is play together for 15 minutes seven times.
Yeah.
Like, that's nothing.
Yeah.
In an 82-game season.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
And you asked the question about the big five. They played 91 minutes together over 12 games.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, so...
Such a lost season.
It is lost, but again, as we've said in the past, you know, you got some royal jelly for Austin Rivers that you wouldn't have gotten.
It's true.
You've got Anthony Davis to... You know, it's hard for people to remember November and December and even January. Anthony Davis was not the number one option. He wasn't, you know, putting up monster games. I don't know if that ever happens without the injuries occurring. So just, you know, seeing him learn how to do that. I mean, I just remember it was only a little more than 2 weeks ago that this team was 32-40 and actually playing really well. I know that seems like forever ago, but if we could remember back then, I mean, this was a guy who just wanted the ball in crunch time and was hitting big shots. You know, I don't know if that happens without the injuries. So there are some good things, but yeah, I mean, it's frustrating because you still go into next season not knowing exactly the roles. I mean, you'll hear Monty Williams talk about Tyreek, and he's even admitted he still doesn't know what position Tyreek Evans is, and we haven't seen much of him and Holiday together. When they were together, they were really good, but, you know, any backcourt is going to need seasons in order to work together and get to know each other and get their familiarity. So it is kind of lost in that sense, but I guess my question back to you is, I don't want to sit here. I mean, we don't know much about the medical staff and the trainers and exactly what they do. But, I mean, how can we say it's total fluke? Can we, I mean, can we infer anything from it? Is it, I guess if you're Dell Demps, how much, when you go into this offseason, as far as the things you're going to change or upgrade, do you look at the injuries and say, you know, that's fine, I trust what we're doing here, we just had a bad season, versus, okay, this is going to be pretty high up on my list as far as looking into, you know, the most up-to-date injury prevention measures, putting more resources into this? Like, how much do you really focus on that versus you just write it up as total fluke?
I would write it up as a total fluke for most of those players. Jason Smith has a history with his shoulder now and his knees that, you know, you can't ignore it. Same with Eric Gordon. But like Drew Holiday, breaking his leg, stress fracture, and now that they put 87 metal plates into his leg to make it stronger, that's an exaggeration. Don't actually take that to the bank. But he has a plate in his leg to make it stronger. That's not an injury that's going to happen. How often do you hear of NBA players who have broken their leg with stress fractures? I mean, this is the fluke thing. You can hear big men breaking their feet over and over again, but he's not a big man, and it wasn't his foot. So most of the injuries, I feel like, you know, are fluke things. Ryan Anderson is a little bit of a concern because, you know, Peyton Manning, he's the one who keeps coming up as the example. He came back and he re-hurt it, but he then came back and he was really strong. So, I don't know. I would go into next season, and the only injuries that would influence decision-making are Eric Gordon and Jason Smith for me.
All right. Yeah, I mean, it's just Tom Habershaw did a really good article on ESPN Insider about a week ago about how this is kind of the new analytics for the smart team. They're studying how players get injured and why, and preventive measures. I mean, yeah, the specific injuries themselves, nothing that any doctor or trainer could have done could have stopped, you know, Ryan Anderson running into Gerald Wallace. But, I mean, there's so many steps before that. There's so many, I don't know, different, just tiny little factor. I mean, we've seen Steve Nash get more, he really believes in certain sleep patterns, and, you know, maybe if you sleep, you're a little fresher and, you know, you're not as slow to react and you don't run into Gerald Wallace. I mean, I'm not talking about specific injuries. I'm talking about maybe getting guys into slightly different cycles or working on different things with their body. I mean, I guess the only conclusion I can make is that there's no way that this is the best staff and they're doing all of the state-of-the-art thing. You know, they're not doing every single thing possible. So,
so in other words, you're hoping that they overturn the medical staff?
No, I hope that they explore every single thing and don't just leave this as something that's, you know, that's important but not ultra important. I mean, I just think you need every single advantage you could get in professional sports. When there's 30 teams and you all have the same cap rules, essentially, you know, and only one team's going to win, you have to have any advantage that you could have. And, you know, the Phoenix Sun staff, I don't know if they're voodoo doctors or, you know, if they're geniuses or if they're doing something that different, or if they're just getting lucky year after year. But there's obviously a small advantage there, one that we don't have. And if you're not always striving to get, you know, to the very top at some field, then, you know, I think you're doing your franchise a disservice. And I can't imagine that anybody could make the argument that what this team does in regard to all of, you know, the different practices that surround health and injury prevention. I can't imagine anybody could say that this is the best in the league. So if you're not striving to the top, you're doing your franchise a disservice. So I hope they put some effort into doing something.
So Mark Cuban, owner of the Dallas Mavericks, who I think, you know, generally he every utterance he has way more coverage than it really should. But one of the very first things I ever read that he put on his blog, it was very early on when his team was winning all those games right before the epic collapse against Golden State. He had mentioned, like, there's people who are giving his organization crap because of the number of assistant coaches and staff that were behind the bench all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this, what he said made like 100%, like, it's just like such a dumb moment. How can people not think this? Like, there were teams at that time that had literally their entire coaching and training staff was five people. And he was like, why in the world would you do that? You are paying an athlete $15 million a year. Why wouldn't you pay $75,000 to a physical trainer to make sure that athlete was always in peak physical shape? And just give it, that man, his job is to make sure that one athlete is in the best shape possible. It's a $75,000 investment on a $15 million salary.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's exactly what I'm talking about. You don't put the cheapest gasoline into a car you've just paid, you know, $300,000 for. Right. And that's all I'm saying is, I don't know if more is better. Like I said, this Habershaw article talks about, you know, this new system that 10 teams have invested in, but it's only been 10 teams. And guess what? One of them is not the New Orleans Pelicans. So, you know, maybe they're doing some other system, or, you know, this is stuff that the team won't really share. And I guess they really don't have to, but there's no way that I could be convinced that they're at the cutting edge, or, you know, and they could be, because not only are they investing money in all these NBA athletes, but the same owner is investing even more in NFL athletes. I mean, if there's one owner that should spare no expense, you know, you couple the $65 million he's paying an NBA salary with the $135 million he's paying in NFL salary, he's right. More incentivized than anybody to be at, you know, the cutting edge of any kind of, you know, technology or systems, or have as many trainers as you could fit in those two buildings. So I just think, for me, it would be something that, I'm not saying fire the whole staff or, you know, but it's something that if I'm Dell Demps, I'm heavily exploring. And if I'm Tom Benson or Mickey Loomis, I'm definitely looking into putting some extra resources in there, because, you know, you're capped out is how much you could spend on players. There's no cap on how much you could spend on this. So I don't see why you would be frugal in this area.
Yeah. So I have one last question that's been preying on me. And it was because I was watching some games last week, actually. And this just clicked in my head, and I was like, wow, this is really bizarre. I was watching a game, and Jrue Holiday was sitting on the bench looking dapper in a suit and talking and having a good time. And I thought to myself, I don't remember how he plays basketball really anymore. And I'm sitting there looking at him. I'm like, I can remember, you know, the big game against Chicago where he hit the big shot. And I can remember he was really nice pulling up off the dribble on a high pick and roll and drilling a three. But I don't have the memories of like his finer points of his game anymore. This is really wrong. Tell me, so was Jrue Holiday a good basketball player?
Yeah, he was, and he was definitely a better basketball player than Nerlens Noel and Gary Harris. But yeah, I mean, it is
Hey, wait, wait. It could be Nerlens Noel and Montrezl Harris.
Oh, Doug McDermott in the mix. Clint Capella. No, I mean, honestly, more of my memories are all of the video I watched of him this summer as a Philadelphia 76ers. I was prepping. I mean, yeah. I mean, I remember, you know, I remember a couple of things. I remember him really... I remember two sides of Jrue Holiday. I remember especially when Eric Gordon was in the game, because I wrote an article on this about a very passive Jrue Holiday. And then I remember that stretch after Gordon got hurt, specifically that Portland game and a couple around that area where he was just, he was a beast and, you know, he was really starting to get into a flow. So, yeah, I remember that. I remember how aware he was both on the ball and off the ball defensively. And, I mean, you talk about how bad this team is defensively. A big part of your defense starts with pressuring that ball handler. And, you know, he was able to do that. So, yeah, I'm the same as you. I can't wait to get Jrue Holiday back out there in Pelicans uniform because it'll almost feel like the first time. When he suits up in that first game next year.
So that should be like the that should be next year's slogan when they're selling tickets. Come see Jrue Holiday and Ryan Anderson. It almost will feel like the first time.
Yeah, I mean, Anderson we had a year, but yeah, I mean, it's frustrating. I guess one of my my question to you has a. I guess this is a bigger picture thing, but we've seen hopefully the last minutes ever of Greg Steensma.
Okay.
So,
wow. Are you kicking him out of the league? Cause I could really enjoy some Greg Steensma minutes on another
team.
Yeah,
that's true. Okay. Last minutes of Greg Steensma as a New Orleans Pelican.
Okay.
I guess this is going to be a first part, and then I'm going to ambush you, and I know you're going to be stuck, but it'll be fun. But my first question to you is, first of all, I want to give a shout-out to Ole from the Bird Rights, who just did a great article on Greg Steensma book, calling him the anchor, because essentially he sinks, you know, everybody else. And, I mean, the numbers were just outstanding. With Steensma on the floor, Tyreke Evans, 46% true shooting. Without him, 52. Anthony Davis goes from 52 to 59. Eric Gordon goes from 48 to 55. Austin Rivers from 44 to 49. I mean, the numbers are just amazing. The only guys who are as good or better with Steensma are Babbitt and Anthony Morrow, just because they're shooters and they don't really go into the lane anyway and it doesn't affect them. But I mean, it was just remarkable. And you know, yes, there was a slight defensive improvement, but nothing, you know, close to the offense just crashing with him on the court. You're talking about a guy who has a net rating on the season of negative 9.2, which As was pointed out in this article, Austin Rivers, who people said last year was one of the worst seasons ever, only had a negative 6.8 rating. So anyway, Greg Steensma was beyond awful in every aspect and just terrible for this team and specifically the players that were on it. Monty Williams, though, even as recently as this past week, I mean, there was a winnable game for the Pelicans in which they had the lead. Monty takes Withy out and puts Steensma in. When asked afterwards why, he says, because Steensma does quote-unquote veteran-type things, whatever that means. So we've seen Monty kind of, you know...
If you're going to ambush me with explain Monty Williams' reasoning again... I'm going to, like, not have any ability to answer.
I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say, is it now Dell's responsibility, knowing this, that, you know, this is a kid who, if you have chocolate chip cookies in the house, is always going to spoil their dinner. Is it Dale's responsibility not to have any chocolate chip cookies in the house?
Absolutely.
I mean, do we put that on him now going into this summer?
Right. I am 100% behind this theory. If Dell Demps brings Greg Steensma back next year any kind of deal.
Anybody like him, I would include also.
If he does that, then I think all of the hashtag Fire Montys out there need to change. Just don't let it happen. We should be bombarding Dell Demps with "Don't bring Steamsma back." We should have a website like you used to have about "Hey Larry Hughes, stop shooting so much." .com. We should have a "Hey Dell Demps, please don't bring Greg Steamsma back." .com.
But I don't even know if it's Steamsma. I could imagine. I really think if you put another 7-foot, 250-pound guy on this roster. I mean, I don't think this was Steamsma's fault. I really think if they...
So what if it's like Pekovic?
Or Kendrick Perkins. I mean, Scott Brooks does the same thing with Perkins and has driven that fan base crazy for years. You know, Brooks was another guy who played in the mid-90s.
Right.
You know, another guy who has that same mentality. I mean, these coaches just can't get out of their own way, seemingly. I don't know if Monty could ever change his thinking and just try to beat a team with scoring. I don't think he'll ever trust that. But I think if Dell Demps puts another defensive-minded 7-foot, 250-pound guy on this roster, which we know Monty wants to bang with guys like DeMarcus Cousins, a strategy I completely disagree with, and I'm going to have a huge post up this summer about how this myth of needing a low post defender is just that. It's a stupid myth. But if Dell goes out and gets another one of those guys just to get him, and Monty plays him too much, I think at this point we got to blame it on Dell.
Yeah.
But okay.
Go ahead.
No, you go. Would you?
I was going to ask you a real quick question.
Yeah.
Just from a player's point of view, do you think that if Dell Demps, not Dell Demps, Monty Williams calls Ryan Anderson into the room with Anthony Davis and sits down and says, okay, we have big center A. We're not even going to like say a name. Just they bring in one defensive minded center who's a banger and has no real offensive talent. But he brings in Ryan Anderson and Anthony Davis and sits them down and says, guys, we're going to do this entirely matchup-based throughout the entire season, where Davis, you're always starting. Every game, you're going to be starting on the floor. Some games will be center. Some games will be at power forward. Ryan, you're going to be starting the game some nights. But, you know, those 25 games a season where there's a big man who I don't want either of you getting pounded on, I'm going to have Frankenstein come in and play, like, the first 15 minutes, let them, you know, tussle with the guy. Do you think anybody in that locker room is going to have a problem? Do you think Ryan Anderson is going to be like, no, I need to be starting every game, bitch?
Yes, I think he will exactly say that. No, I don't think anybody would say that. My clarifying question is, if I'm either of you, those guys, is I'm going to ask you, so I'll ask you, Mr. Schwann, list those guys for me.
Okay. DeMarcus Cousins.
Agree. But here's my other thing. DeMarcus Cousins, the first guy on that list, and I fully agree. If you're building this team to win in the playoffs and win a championship, do you build at all with DeMarcus Cousins in mind? I mean, this is a serious question.
No.
There will be 3 or 4 regular season games, but do you make any roster moves with DeMarcus Cousins in mind, knowing what the ultimate goal is?
No.
Okay, so DeMarcus Cousins, keep going.
I would probably put Dwight Howard in there.
Okay.
Let's see. I had Hibbert.
Noah. Dean Hibbert offensively.
He can still punish a smaller guy. He can do it.
I mean, I'm really not so sure. I don't know if you've been watching this last month, but again, I mean,
Well, not the last month, but the whole team's been disastrous.
I would turn it on you. I mean,
Al Jefferson?
You want David West running out and covering Ryan Anderson on the perimeter? Like, okay, but anyway, Al Jefferson would be number two on my list. But again, two games, you will never meet them in the playoffs. Okay, who else?
Pekovic. Marc Gasol.
Marc Gasol, this is the one I vehemently disagree with. Marc Gasol is a high post center.
Yeah, well, so really I'm thinking Grizzlies.
And Ryan Anderson.
Because somebody is going to be punishing you among those two, between those two guys and the Grizzlies.
Anthony Davis has done tremendously against Zach Randolph.
Okay.
I do not agree. I would put Ryan Anderson on Gasol and Anthony Davis on Zach Randolph. So, okay, who else? Like,
That's pretty much a list.
Right, and this is what I'm saying, is that, yeah, if one stumbles along, if you come across one or if you get one in an Eric Gordon trade, fine, take them. But this whole idea that, man, we got to go out this summer and get this big to be able to play the role that you're talking about, I don't agree. You know, if you could go and get Costa Kufos for Pierre Jackson, you know, sure. But I'm not going out and making it a high priority personally. I mean, there's a couple of guys, none of which are, you know, guys for playoff contenders that I'm really worried about. I mean, San Antonio, Anthony Davis could cover anybody on that team and just do fine. Oklahoma City as well. I mean, just go down the list. The Clippers, you know, at that point, you're just dealing with athleticism. I don't, you know, and Agenza's done really good against that team. So,
yeah, but let me stop for a second there, though. I mean, you're talking about these teams and you know, matching up like in the playoffs where it's just a few games. But I mean, we have seen Anthony Davis struggle with injuries, and none of them are like injuries that I'm like, oh no, he's got that injury. I have to worry about him like going forward. But a lot of them are just wear and tear injuries. So
he hit his hand on a dunk attempt.
I know, but you know, right. That's the big one. But he keeps getting these like little bang up shoulder, and his back's hurt him. You gotta believe that some of that's because he's fighting with guys who outweigh him by 40 pounds.
Get a better training staff. No, I'm just kidding. No.
He can just wear a back brace.
Personally, I mean, well, Monty's theory is that the back spasms are because he's still growing, which would be, you know, great news. A lot of the game, I mean, people forget at least four or five of the games he missed in the middle of the season, maybe not four or five, two or three, he would have definitely played if they would have mattered. Remember, he was mad that he was sitting out. I specifically remember that Minnesota game where, you know, he could have put – but. Yeah, I mean, so we're talking about maybe 15 minutes, 25 minutes. Again, I wouldn't mind it, but to me, Agenza and Withy.
Good enough?
Like I said, if I could get Costa Kufos and not have to give up anything for him or Timofey Mozgov or something like that, of course I'd take them, but I don't go into this summer making that my number one priority, the way that some people seem to think it should be.
Well, let's not talk about number one priorities because that's going to be like our next podcast.
Let me ask you this. So this is what I was going to ambush you with. I think without a doubt, Greg Stiemsma is the most unified. And I say unified because there's nobody on the other side of the fence. There's been people on the other side of the fence for everybody, but just the fan base is unified in their anger towards him and their desire to never watch him play on the court. We're talking about, you know, just the entire fan base just can't take it. Never a positive thing to say about the guy, and probably rightfully so. So I want your all Hornets/Pelicans. I want your starting five of just guys that absolutely infuriate the fan base.
Okay. Well, Steam's the starting center.
Yeah.
There's not any question. My starting shooting guard has to be Eric Gordon.
Yeah, I think at this point.
Yeah, I mean, maybe earlier in the year, no, but I mean, he's got to be there. Let's see, point guard, probably because of the way he went out, Baron Davis, because there was real animosity when he left. And let's see, starting power forward. I don't know. Can we put Zoe there?
So you're just going with guys who just were disliked because of the way they left, or...
Yeah, I guess that's kind of a cheap way. You want me to hit, like, people who just suck.
I mean, it could be a combination. I mean, just okay. People that infuriate because they were playing and just, like, I know a shooting guard who infuriated you. Come on, think about it. Who's a guy that got the ball on the post every single game?
Oh, Desmond Mace was a small forward.
Yeah.
And he didn't infuriate me. That's actually my Desmond Mason killing is actually more pointed at Byron Scott than anybody else. And if I had to put a coach out there, I probably would settle on Byron Scott.
You got a lot to choose from. I mean, Jeff Bauer and Tim Floyd are.
Yeah, I don't know. Byron Scott made me pretty upset over the course of his tenure. Shooting guard. Can we go with J.R. Smith? I think I'd put him. So if I'm just like doing total infuriation factor, like J.R. Smith was like the perfect person there because you could see he had every talent in the world, and he was a moron. And half the time you couldn't figure out why he was even on the court because you knew he was just going to dick up every play. So I'll go with him there. Bobby Jackson, and as point guard. That guy couldn't, when he was a Pelican, he could not shoot a lick. Or a Hornet. A Hornet, sorry. I mean, he just made me so upset when he was out there. This is a guy who lost his job to Gennaro Pargo when Gennaro Pargo was shooting 37%.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if people remember how bad that bench unit was.
It was pretty awful.
Oh, my God. And, yeah, and Bobby Jackson, at least back in the Sacramento days, he could really play some hounding defense, but he had lost that, too, at that point.
All right, starting center. Actually, Steams really gets the power forward spot on my team. Starting center, Hilton Armstrong.
Oh, I like it.
I mean, there is no human being more frustrating than Hilton Armstrong.
He would be
going after an uncontested rebound, and it would bounce off his hands and go out.
Yeah, I was going to say, who has worse hands, him or Steamsma?
Armstrong, there's not even a question.
I don't know. Steamsma's... It's pretty awful.
He's pretty awful, but Armstrong was like on a whole nother level of stone hands. I'm having trouble thinking of a small forward.
Think about the same reasoning you just gave Hilton Armstrong. Those are guys who come clearly to mind.
For a small forward?
Yep.
It's not coming to mind. Who you got? Who you got a small forward?
I pick...
Oh, Julian Wright?
Yep.
I could get the hatred going for Julian Wright.
Are you kidding? Do you remember when he would grab a rebound and try to lead a fast break and make some kind of fancy pass or off balance? Gosh. Yeah, Julian Wright, for me, I would say the other one is James Posey. You take away the first half of the first year that he was here. He immediately just seemed to not care, got overweight, didn't really, and just became a terrible contract on the team. I would say James Posey is in the conversation as well.
Yeah, a couple of his seasons would definitely be there. Because, like, yeah, there was fewer millstones like James Posey in the latter years of his contract. Wow. There's got to be some more, though. I got to go back further in my mind.
Yeah.
Like, I was always really frustrated with Xavier Henry.
Yeah, but, I mean, didn't really play. I mean, I think the frustration with Steamsma is he just plays so many minutes when there are better alternatives.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to think more. You know.
I remember you and I having lots of conversations about Willie Green and why the hell is he starting.
See, I liked Willie more than most. I was a fan there.
Darius Sangala?
Sangala, Yeah, I mean, he wasn't around very long.
Yeah, I can't work up a good hatred for him.
Who took minutes away from, how am I blanking on the name? Jason Smith before Jason Smith, always dressed dopey.
Ryan Bowen,
whoever took minutes.
I loved Ryan Bowen.
Whoever took minutes away from Ryan Bowen.
Yeah.
He would be on my list. It goes back. I'm trying to think older. Back in the day, I remember, guys like, I don't know why George Lynch always bothered me, or, hey, I don't know, more role players or whatever, yes.
How about Arvidas Matsiauskas? Do you remember
him? Yeah, no, that was like our first foreign import. I remember being...
Yeah, I was all excited when we got him. He was supposed to be like the shooter to end all shooters. I actually looked at him like 2 years ago on one of those Ball in Europe blogs, because he was like leading the Lithuanian league in shooting. That guy can shoot.
Yeah. And then what was the other one? Marcus Vinicius, or
yes.
All the potential in the world never amounted. Yeah, another guy who was really frustrating for me that blew up elsewhere was Brandon Bass.
And then of course there can't forget Jimmy Jackson, who just refused to even show up.
Jimmy.
Do you ever remember that?
I don't.
They made the trade for Jimmy Jackson and Casey Jacobson.
Oh, the immortal Stanford legend.
And Jimmy said he wasn't. He said he wasn't going to that damn team.
Oh yeah, there's some memorable ones. I think Steamsma though. I just think for how he united us all. There has to be some props given to him. He's brought the fan base together, at least on one thing this year.
Yeah, I'm really trying to think of somebody who I had like as much like when he checked in, sad face.
I mean, Rasul Butler had to be up there.
Yeah, but I just felt bad for Rasul after a while. I am yet to reach the I feel sad for Steve. Bryce Drew.
Yeah, but I mean, he didn't really, I mean, to me, I would try to think of guys who, like, did things that they just were not capable of doing and took shots away from other guys. So, I don't know, it's just, it's really frustrating with Steamsma
is very special.
But hopefully we're done with him. I mean, my last thing for you is, you know, I think that the guy that we have to say, you know, in this stretch, even with all these losses, you know, a bright spot, but a bright spot in a way that kind of worries us, is Anthony Morrow, because, I mean, there's no doubt that he's gonna opt out and become an unrestricted free agent this year. And, you know, the team would love to have him back, but really, if Gordon's still on this roster and now you have Pierre Jackson coming in, you have all these guards, how much time can you promise him? How much money, you know, a resource could you give to yet another guard? But I think he's a guy that you absolutely have to bring back. I mean, his last 10 games, the guy's putting up 17.5 points on 55% shooting. It's not like he's just scoring a bunch of points for a bad team because he's chucking up. He's actually, you know, doing it at a high percentage. He's at 46% from three. You know, on the season, they're starting to, I mean, and this is with him as a first, second option most of the time now with all these guys hurt, not somebody that teams are forgetting about. What would your plan be with him going into the off season? What would you be willing to give to him, and what role would you see for a guy who, you know, he'll be 29 before the season starts next year, but he's a shooter. That lasts, I mean, Derek Fisher's still going. That lasts forever. What would be your plan with Anthony Morrow going forward?
So here's the whole problem. Like, Eric Gordon, if you have Eric Gordon, you almost can't afford to keep Morrow around. Because... for the very reasons you listed there, like you can't necessarily promise him a lot of minutes if Gordon is around. Well, maybe you can because Gordon will be injured, but you know what I mean. You can't have that conversation with Morrow. Hey, sign with us. Gordon will get injured and you get all the minutes you want to have. That's not really a conversation you can have in free agency. So in an ideal situation, I'll be honest with you. The only guards that I would be bringing back next year would be Morrow, Holiday, and Evans. And I would let all the rest go or find some way to move them to upgrade something else. Rivers, take him or leave him. He could turn into a perfectly fine basketball player, but you know what? It doesn't matter right now in the greater scheme of things. And if there's any way to move him for something better, I would do that.
Yep.
So if I could go into next season with a rotation with Morrow, Evans, and Jrue Holiday getting most of the minutes, I'm happy.
Yeah, and I'll say to that, I mean, at least this is me interpreting what you're saying, because I kind of agree with you, is if this team is healthy, Austin Rivers doesn't have the ability to become the player he can be. Like, I mean, you're talking about, if you're talking about those three other guards that you got to get minutes for, you're talking about maybe 10 to 12 minutes for Austin Rivers as a guy who's just setting up other people. I mean, at that point, maybe he's turning into a defensive specialist who occasionally, you know, gets to the rim, but he can't really become the best player if he's stuck behind those guys. So I tend to agree, not because giving up on Rivers, but yeah, I mean, and what do you think? So Anthony Morrow hits the market on July 1st. What would be your guesses as the kind of contract offers he gets?
Well, I think that his reputation around the league, and there's been nothing this year to refute that, is that his defense is abysmal. And he's been on a team with a really bad defense. So it's not like any manager is going to be out there looking at him thinking, I need a 3-and-D, I need a 3-and-D, I need a 3-and-D. I mean, here's the reality about that whole 3-and-D idea for wings. They're not looking at 3 as the primary ability in most of the situations. They're looking at the D, and if he can knock down the 3, then he can play. So Morrow, the D is okay, but that's not the focus. So and he has a reputation of being a bad defender. So I don't think he's going to get the kind of offers that, like, you know, Kyle Korver did, and that's a bad example because Korver is more 3 than D. But there were some guys this summer who got locked into those 3-and-D contracts around the mid-range. I would expect that he would get more or something in the $3 million range. So, honestly, if I was the Pelicans, I'd put down a 3-year, $9 million deal for him.
So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people are thinking that he'll get a big payday. I mean, he got the 3-year, $12 million deal coming off of pretty much the exact same year, but he was only like 24 years old when he signed that one. So, you know, sorry, yeah, he was 24 years old. So he gets the 3-year, $12 million deal. New Jersey thing, so he has potential. He's this young guy. I don't think he gets anything close to that again. I mean, a guy like Darrell Wright, who isn't as good of a three-point shooter but is better in other offensive areas and a much better defender, only got $3 million last year. Mike Dunleavy Jr., who was about around the same age, only got $3 million last year. I think he's a $2 to $3 million top player, and I agree. I mean, I think, you know, plucking down a similar deal as they did with Jason Smith a couple years ago, 3 years, $7.5-$8 million, something like that. But beyond just the scoring, I really love you know, the type of guy he is. I mean, in the stretch when there's nothing to play for, he's in, locked into every game and fully invested in every single moment. So, yeah, I think he's a guy that going into this offseason where you're going to have, what, Brian Roberts, him, Jason Smith, Aminu, Steemsma all as free agents. It would have been crazy to say this even a couple of months ago, but I think he's clearly the number one priority amongst the team's own free agents.
Yeah, and I'm not going to disagree at all. And like I said, I mean, if Roberts leaves and Austin Rivers is shipped out, I mean, I've thought about this for a while because you asked me this before about, you know, how does our backcourt work? I mean, Gordon's got to go and keep those three guys I mentioned before, Evans, Holiday, and Morrow, and bring Pierre Jackson in. Let him be the backup point guard.
I don't know that guy. I'm really skeptical about that guy, both how he fits on the court and just the maturity off it. Well, I'm just talking about fit. I mean, if we're talking about a team with Tyreke Evans, Jrue Holiday, and Anthony Morrow, I would want all three of those guys to touch and shoot more than him. Why do I need another shoot first guard? So, fit and then just, you know, seems to be a lack of maturity. I mean, the guy already parted ways with his turkey team now. I mean, there's something there. So, I mean, do you think Austin Rivers has done enough this year to get himself back into conversations where teams would look at him as an intriguing trade asset?
I don't think he's a negative anymore, and people could see that he's made a leap and could turn into something. I don't think any team is going to, like, knock your socks off anything, but he could be a sweetener.
Yeah, I really think the Bulls, I really think the teams that would love him would be the defensive-minded teams. So it's interesting. Last thing, there's two games, final two games of the year. You seeing wins in either of these games or anything to – I guess give people something to watch for or root for or hope for in these final two games.
Well, I mean, so you should watch just because these guys are going to absolutely try. And there is enough, like, interest here. Like, Austin Rivers, seeing him play and handle it as a big boy is interesting. Babbitt is interesting. Miller is interesting to me. I wouldn't go into these expecting to see wins. Of course, I don't think they're going to win either of the games unless, like, Rockets aren't really playing for seeding in the last game of the season. But I'll be honest, I enjoyed the last Rockets game. I thought it was fun watching these guys just play their heart out. They're all, this is one of the things, like, just watching this game made me think maybe the couple of years before we gave Monty a little bit too much credit when he had a team that was seriously outmatched, that kept playing hard every game, and we kept saying, well, Monty keeps his guys playing hard. Well, these guys are playing hard too, and Monty's still there, but really, what else? I mean, other than Aminu, who doesn't seem to care that much, all of these guys are really playing for their next shot. I mean, Austin Rivers is the only guy there who has any sort of real security with a contract and knows that next year he is going to be on an NBA roster.
Right.
So all of these guys are going to be playing hard, and, you know, they're basically hoping that this is their audition. So it's fun to watch guys who, like, actually have something at stake, I feel.
Yeah, no, I agree. Oklahoma City is mad after losing today, and they kind of do have to, not have to, but they want to win tomorrow to essentially lock up that two seed. So I don't see there's any chance there. And I actually think Oklahoma City's backups would probably kill us at this point as well. But the Houston game is a possible win, although it looks like it's going to come down to the final day of whether they get the four seed or the five seed. So I'm sure they're going to go all out for that. But yeah, I mean, watching the development of some guys, we joked a little bit earlier, but watching a guy like James Sutherland, who, you know, he has a lot of Darius Miller's game, but without the hesitancy. And, right. You know.
And he does a little more.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy, he's a really long guy, which, you know, I know that Monty and Dell want length. on the wing. He's a guy that at least could get a summer league tryout. So it'll be interesting. I enjoyed the Rockets game because it made it clear for me who I'm going to root for in the first round. As much as you and I don't like Portland, I hate that Houston team. I hate the flopping and the whining and the just the way they play overall. So watch that one. It'll be the last one for a while, but hopefully they could sneak one out for the reasons I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast. But either way, it's just an absolutely crazy season, and hopefully one that I'm honestly hoping that gets erased from the memory, and I don't even remember 3 or 4 years from now, because I wouldn't have believed it if you would have told me it at the beginning of the year.
Yeah. Last time the Pelicans had a series of major injuries, they won 56 games next year.
That's what I'm hoping for next year.
So thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know. We're going to have one more podcast after the final couple games where we'll be talking about what we want to see happening. Then we'll have some during the offseason as well, especially around free agency. And of course, when we inevitably win the lottery and draft Andrew Wiggins, we'll be talking a lot about that.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks for listening.